The Christmas Banquet by Nathaniel Hawthorne, narrated by Trevor O'Hare. "I have here attempted," said Roderick, unfolding a few sheets of manuscript, as he sat with Rosina and the sculptor in the summer house, "I have attempted to seize hold of a personage who glides past me, occasionally, in my walk through life. My former sad experience, as you know, has gifted me with some degree of insight into the gloomy mysteries of the human heart, through which I have wandered like one astray in a dark cavern, with his torch fast flickering to extinction. But this man, this class of men, is a hopeless puzzle." "Well, but propound him," said the sculptor. "Let us have an idea of hint to begin with." "Why, indeed," replied Roderick, "he's such a being as I could conceive you to carve out of marble, and some yet unrealized perfection of human science to endow with an exquisite mockery of intellect. But still, there lacks the last inestimable touch of a divine creator. He looks like a man, and perchance like a better specimen of man than you ordinarily meet. You might esteem him wise. He is capable of cultivation and refinement, and has at least an external conscience. But the demands that spirit makes upon spirit are precisely those to which he cannot respond. When at last you come close to him, you find him chill and unsubstantial, a mere vapor." "I believe," said Rosina, "I have a glimmering idea of what you mean." "Then be thankful," answered her husband, smiling. "But do not anticipate any further illumination from what I'm about to read. I have here imagined such a man to be, what probably he never is, conscious of the deficiency in his spiritual organization. Methinks the result would be a sense of cold unreality, wherewith he would go shivering through the world, longing to exchange his load of ice for any burden of real grief that fate could fling upon a human being." Contenting himself with this preface, Roderick began to read. "In a certain old gentleman's last will and testament, there appeared a bequest which, as his final thought indeed, was singularly in keeping with a long life of melancholy eccentricity. He devised a considerable sum for establishing a fund, the interest of which was to be expended, annually forever, in preparing a Christmas banquet for 10 of the most miserable persons that could be found. It seemed not to be the testator's purpose to make these half a score of sad hearts merry, but to provide that the stern or fierce expression of human discontent should not be drowned, even for that one holy and joyful day, amid the acclamation of festal gratitude which all Christendom sends up. And he desired, likewise, to perpetuate his own remonstrance against the earthly course of providence, and his sad and sour dissent from those systems of religion or philosophy which either find sunshine in the world or draw it down from heaven. The task of inviting the guests, or of selecting among such as might advance their claims to partake of this dismal hospitality, was confided to the two trustees or stewards of the fund. These gentlemen, like their deceased friend, were somber humorists who made it their principal occupation to number the sable threads in the web of human life and drop all the golden ones out of the reckoning. They performed their present office with integrity and judgment. The aspect of the assembled company on the day of the first festival might not, it is true, have satisfied every beholder that these were especially the individuals, chosen forth from all the world, whose grief were worthy to stand as indicators of the mass of human suffering. Yet, after due consideration, it could not be disputed that here was a variety of hopeless discomfort, which, if it sometimes arose from causes apparently inadequate, was thereby only the shrewder imputation against the nature and mechanism of life. The arrangements and decorations of the banquet were probably intended to signify that death and life, which had been the testator's definition of existence, the hall, illuminated by torches, was hung round with curtains of deep and dusky purple, and adorned with branches of cypress and wreaths of artificial flowers, imitative of such as used to be strewn over the dead. A sprig of parsley was laid by every plate, the main reservoir of wine was a sepulchral urn of silver, whence the liquor was distributed around the table in small vases, accurately copied from those that held the tears of ancient mourners. Neither had the stewards, if it were their taste that arranged these details, forgotten the fantasy of the old Egyptians, who seated a skeleton at every festive board, and mocked their own merriment with the imperturbable grin of death's head. Such a fearful guest, shrouded in a black mantle, sat now at the head of the table. It was whispered, I know not what truth, that the testator himself had once walked the visible world with the machinery of that sane skeleton, and that it was one of the stipulations of his will that he should thus be permitted to sit from year to year at the banquet which he had instituted. If so, it was perhaps covertly implied that he had cherished no hopes of bliss beyond the grave to compensate for the evils which he felt or